grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're asking if it's time to start forgetting about the Women's World Cup and if it ever existed, or if we're 6 days away from the World Cup final win that we sort of need. The Australian men smash South Africa again in one thing and then lose again in another thing in some shit that's happening at 3 a.m. and couldn't possibly mean less. We're talking Jadeja screamers, hashtag Kohli failures, Copeland slow meds, opportunities to say slug Webster, and three hashtag ask TDCs are from anonymous, signalling more absurdity and possibly libel stories from confused young men seeking validity in WhatsApp groups. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com.au. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined right here in Melbourne with Sam Perry. Pez, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Higgos. Lovely intro. Feeling very good.
Mate, on the back of, I don't know if you saw this, but from Monash University, CC, were bowled out for four yesterday. Yeah. It caught my eye because Richard Hines, friend of the show, retweeted that score. They were bowled out for four and the other team chased it down. None down. They got the seven runs. The game was over very early. So there's also been a plethora of low scores around the country.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of leading towards this first question of like, you know, what's the lowest score that you've been involved in, score against or being part
four
of the team?
Yeah, a few. We're getting a lot of low scores, aren't we, at the moment? People are sending us scorecards, or either that or sending us scorecards of people who have made zero runs or a dark off like 98 balls.
Yes.
There's a lot of that coming. I don't know if it's because the decks are tougher in February.
It's climate change.
Into March. It's a climate change related thing. Mm. Wickets are slowing, hard to get off the mark, or just a lot of it's just a lot of people like to send us their scorecards now.
Maybe, yeah. When I say low scores, I'm talking low, like less than like 20.
Yeah.
I've seen four or five scores just around from like proper competitions.
Yeah.
Like 16 all out. This one, four. I mean, that's... How do you get bowled up for four?
Yeah.
That's good bowling.
It's very good bowling, yeah. Just hit the top of off, you know what they say, side mouth, smugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four's getting very silly.
It's fast.
I mean, I told a story a few weeks ago about bowling a team out for 10 in like under 11s or something, so I won't go back into that. Bowled Fitzroy Doncaster out for 54 in second grade for St Kilda.
Okay.
I didn't bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
In 2011.
We sort of built pressure on the field by standing gully, kind of dot balls.
I passed the one down, 20 not out. But but then that actually took me on like a my cricket wormhole because I remember facing a left-arm orthodox who looked like he was about 12 years old.
Yeah.
Called Ejaz Alavi. I remember he's a good bowler. He's a good bowler. And then I looked him up, and sure enough, he's taken like 500 wickets in first grade now. And he's only like 23.
He's made 70 tests.
No. Well, apparently, he might be getting a Big Bash contract. Anyway, but the one good I flex. Did want to talk about was thank you. Was we were bowled out in under 15s against Hawkesbury. We always talk about Hawkesbury.
Mm.
They bowled us out for 33.
Mm-hmm.
And it was off the back of one of the... Like, it was actually one of those nightmares coming true where you turn up... So under 15s, we're 14 years old, where either pubescent or prepubescent, depending upon the rate at which you got
there.
And that is the height of fear that you have for...
Puberty.
An opposition... Well, yes. Puberty Blues. Everyone read that book, right? Dad gave it to me, the book.
So many one of the
opposition was a man, and he had a beard, and it was actually
14.
You know, yes, and he was, and he's from Hawkesbury, and where there's sheltered North Shore types.
Sure, yeah.
I didn't know that at the time, but that's what we were. Yeah. And Hawkesbury was, like wild west guys,
yeah.
And he was warming up. Excuse me, and he looked very quick. And so it proved to be.
Yeah.
And we were so frightened.
The same shot.
We were so frightened of this child.
Yeah.
Who was a man.
Yeah, man child.
One of our teammates, you know him, I won't mention him here. One of our teammates, which is true to form for him, walked up to him and said, Oh, David, how fast do you bowl? Don't do that. Please don't do that. Anyway, he took like six for or something like that. And he made, he bowled us out for 33. We lost outright in a day. Made 13, that is. But, they bowled us out for 130 on again. That side had like Steve O'Keefe and stuff like that. So they were just bigger and scarier and ready to be more ready to be men. And then, yeah, also our coach around that time was, like, giving us massages, but that's a separate issue.
Sure. Oh, yeah, we spoke about that.
That's
yeah.
A yeah, off yeah. air. Yeah.
Well, it's an ongoing investigation.
Anyway, yeah, 33. Yeah. Anyway, he went on to do nothing in cricket, that guy. David Bryant. He was a very, very, very quick bowler that day.
Probably listens.
Yeah.
And when you say quick,
and he was a lovely bloke.
He was probably buying, like, 85 kilometres an hour.
I don't know, man. We'll have to ask Sock. But yeah. It felt quick. It was one of those ones where it was like, I can't see it. Yeah. Anyway.
It was a heavy ball at 14.
Yeah. What does heavy ball mean? What about you?
There was one that I can remember where I got bowled out for 32. It was like under 11s. And no. It was younger than that because we're playing on a concrete pitch. And this is pre the day.
Grip's a bit better there.
Yeah. It was. And there were like potholes in this pitch.
Okay. It was a pitch issue.
It was a pitch issue with a concrete. I mean, it was literally a road, the wicket. It had fucking potholes in it.
Yeah, pothole. Bro.
And, you know, they chased it none down, so obviously had no problem with it. Mm. But yeah, there were like maybe 6 or 7 ducks. Mm. I remember the sort of the match clearly, but the scores are a bit fuzzy and the names and faces are a little bit different. But it was interesting what I was thinking about on the way here, actually. I was thinking about, you know, when there's heaps happening in a game in a ground, in an oval next to where you're playing.
Yes.
And Hawkesbury was one of the games where they had 3 grounds next to each other. And so when there's fucking like hooting and hollering like every like 6 seconds, you're like, fuck, what's going on over there? Like when at this game where Richard was at, where like Monash got bought for 4, it must have been like gripping to watch.
That's right.
Like you couldn't focus on your own game.
Yeah. You're in a boring game yourself. Yeah. You're sort of wishing you're in the game next door because something's actually
sort of like
happening.
2 for 90. It's a bit, it's not one way or the other. It's kind of boring.
Exactly. Yeah. Incidentally, you just made me realize that like, you know, calling a really good batting wicket a road is quite a first world thing, isn't it? Because it presumes a road is, you know, quite flat.
But sure,
you
know, yeah.
Many places roads aren't.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the Romans built the first road, you see.
Good point.
Good players.
Good little players.
What would they be like the Romans? No, let's not go back there. Okay. Still figuring out Germany. What's
going
on.
How would they play?
There. How would they play? Front foot.
The front stool.
The front dogs.
Yeah. Aggressive.
That's what the team was called, the Roman front dogs.
Good circuit.
Hey, women's.
Grapes and afternoon teas.
What did you bring this week? More wine? the Women's T20 World Cup. There's the timing of our podcast has not aligned with the scheduling because last week we released a show when Australia were 3 for 10 against Sri Lanka.
That's right. Then
they're playing the most important game of the World Cup so far at 3 p.m. this afternoon. Right now we're recording it at 1:30. So about an hour and a half. So we couldn't be timing this any worse.
Yeah.
So anything we say now is going to be redundant and we'll flag everything that we say about that now. So Australia have to play New Zealand. The winner of that game will go through the semifinals.
Yes, it's effectively a quarterfinal.
Yeah. So maybe the conversation should be overarching Australia.
Yeah, so we don't make a mistake.
That's
right, because you don't want to make a mistake. It's a 34-year-old.
People started to write in things that we've said incorrectly, and I like that.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed that. It's good, but don't do it ever again. It hurts my ego.
Like a vocal blip and stuff, like just mispronouncing somebody's name.
Yes.
Not even meaning to. But yes. Yeah, and please write all that in. It feels good to get it.
Yeah. So but maybe the conversation should be about this Australian women's team, like where they're at, because like they were in serious strife against Sri Lanka. They got over the line. They were 3 for 10, chasing 130, 140, something like that.
Yeah.
And they got over the line with Meg Lanning and Beth Mooney scored the runs, didn't they?
Yes.
Sri Lanka.
Rachel Haynes.
Yeah. Rachel Haynes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So
Beth Mooney got runs against Bangladesh.
Yes.
Following game.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I mean, where's the team at, Pez? Are we about to lose? We're about to lose, and then CA's plan of making this final 90,000 people MCG just all fall apart.
Oh, with any luck, yeah. No, that's not true. Well, yeah, I guess you want to caveat everything because a lot of people like us are swarming around this World Cup without having appropriately followed women's cricket with great depth,
of course,
right?
However, myself included.
You can deduce patterns from any cricket team by, you know, looking at their history, then looking at them now and looking at the manner of losses of the matches that you do watch or even just the patterns of the game. And I feel like when you look at this Australian side, obviously they, you know, I think I read they've won like 10 out of 15 ODI or T20 tournaments.
Right.
In world cricket in the last, you know, however long.
Good record.
So it's a pretty good record. And Andrew Wooey, if you will, for Sydney Morning Herald or Fairfax, wrote a wonderful piece recently just sort of explaining how, like, since Australia dominated the 2018 World Cup, a lot of the other teams have started to invest far more money than they previously had.
Yes.
Still hasn't probably caught up with Australia yet, but Australia's probably closer to their ceiling as professionals. Progressive professionals, I think, was the category he put them in, whereas there's a lot more upside for other teams, and we're probably starting to see them catch up a little bit. So it stands to reason that Australia aren't as dominant as they used to be. That said, when you look at like tournament cricket or any tournament sports, like sometimes the best team is tinkering around a little bit at the start. The idea of tapering then peaking is kind of accepted in sports science. We saw it with England in the Men's World Cup.
Yeah.
And you know, they were sort of making a few mistakes for the round robin sort of section, but they were pretty, they were still comfortable enough.
You always felt that, no, they were still the best team.
Yeah, I don't really feel like that with this Aussie side from the little that I do know. They don't strike me as a side that's tinkering, waiting to peak. They look like a side that is out of form, you know, and it looks like a side who is also beset by injury, you know, Taylor Vlamic, who they were sort of resting their pace hopes on, wasn't able to play in this tournament. Elise Perry, it may succumb to injury. They're sort of, as we go to where at 1:30, she may be out with a hip. And that was interesting because like Meg Lanning sort of like aggressively denied that Perry was injured a few days ago. You're seeing like the New Zealand keeper said through the week that like, oh, there's probably more pressure on Australia than us. And like both Matthew Mott and Elisa Healy have come out and like given her a serve for saying that. Now, maybe that's all just boxing hype or whatever, but just strikes me as a team probably are a bit under pressure. They're under pressure. There's injuries. They're a bit out of form. So, you know, like New Zealand, you'd imagine a pretty good shot. So as we go to where we congratulate Australia on their 107-run win.
Yeah, I know you mean, because it was as much the loss to India that they, just the humiliation of like not being able to play spin. And then it was a similar thing where Sri Lanka opened the bowling in that game at the Wacker there. Where like just trouble again with playing spin. And it's just like it reveals like a flaw in the lineup.
It's
like
a straight technical flaw.
Yeah, whereas like to draw again comparisons to what England did in the Men's World Cup at in the UK just there. And it was like, they were still like, Josh Butler probably scored 90 off five balls batting an eight or whatever. Like there was still that feeling of like the way they were losing. It was like they're almost losing the right kind of way.
It is true. I mean, there are manners of loss, like of losses that you can go, okay, well, that's probably, you know, put down to rest or trying new combinations, etc. But like, especially if Perry is out in that side, they have to, they do have to go, as Meg Lanning said, they have to go to a plan B, plan C. So, look, I reckon it all makes for a really interesting like contest this afternoon, and it's going to make it interesting all the way through. I mean, like we said on the cast last week, you can't really fix the inability to pick a wrong one in
exactly.
a couple of weeks' time. You know, just through extra work. What you can do is put a match on during the day, though, so you can see it a little bit better. But I mean, I think Australia are rightly under the pump. So once again, congratulations on their trouncing of the Kiwis.
Was anyone else good? India are good. They haven't lost a game.
India the only one, so I think haven't really had a blip. You know, like they're undefeated.
Everyone else has
lost a game there. So even I mean, obviously Australia got some runs against Bangladesh, but what do we have here? England lost to South Africa. West Indies lost to Pakistan. New Zealand nearly lost to Bangladesh.
Yeah,
they took India all the way. New Zealand as well. So that was quite close. So it's all pretty close. You'd have to say.
But we don't like that. Like if it was a different tournament, maybe it's like, oh, if you're neutral, you're like, oh yeah, close games, that's good. But Australia's team's decimation. We need to demolish every single team, get to that final, and it needs to be against England.
It's the Australian way in sport. You know, you reach a certain bar in any sport, actually politics, any area of life. You hit a certain bar of dominance, and then that becomes the bar for all public expectations for decades to come. So we experienced that in men's cricket, you know, we experienced that in Olympics, and now we're doing it with women's cricket.
Well, the Olympics is cancelled
because
of coronavirus. So, you know, if Australia don't get through, they should probably just not finish the tournament just through safety concerns.
We were saying in this article, actually, that, like England's up the number of contracts issued, like India's quadrupled the value of contracts from a low base, New Zealand's doubled its spending, the seven white ferns, like the New Zealand players in the WBBL, Sophie Devine's arguably the best in the world.
Yeah.
You know, basically Australia's been really generous to these other nations and frankly we're going to regret it. And I find that very un-Australian, to be honest, in a sporting sense.
Mate, let's talk about the South Africa Australia series over there, the men's.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go
I remember everything.
The first ODI there, 291 South Africa scored, then Australia scored 217 in reply. They lost by 74 runs in that ODI match. An ODI series, a three-match ODI series in South Africa that's on a difficult time for Australians to watch.
Oh, absolutely fabulous.
Let's really deep dive this one, mate. And we lost, so there's nothing good to talk about.
Plenty to read into as well in relation to the next World Cup. This is the real.
Where is the next World Cup?
I don't fucking know. This is the next. This is the real like doldrums. The next one's in India. This is the real doldrums of the ODI cycle, isn't it? You're a couple of months after the World Cup. Yeah. It's new combinations. You know, Josh Hazlewood's coming out saying, I don't know if I'm going to make the next World Cup. He's playing like...
I don't know.
I don't know if I'm going to play. This match was played against a backdrop of bushfires.
Yeah.
If you saw that. I mean, you know, God forbid you sort of make jokes about bushfires, but obviously that's very good and normal now. You know, get the match gone tonight, you can see the flames on the side. So that's the new age that we're living. This is the new cycle, the bushfire cycle of ODI cricket. Mm. Yeah, what was it? Like South Africa were 3 for 40-odd, then they put on a partnership, hit 290, and Australia were 3 for 174. Sitting pretty. Like probably just over a run of ball, three wickets down. All out 212. So basically, what, like Warner made 20-odd, then it was Smith and Labuschagne made some runs and no one else makes runs.
That's
pretty much Australia's batting anyway.
Mitch Marsh made 16 in this game. Okay. And I was actually thinking about what Jimmy Neesham said. He was talking about like Latham, Ross Taylor and Kane Williamson. Mm. They're playing a different sport almost, he was saying, because like those guys are so secure in their place. And I was thinking about Mitch Marsh in his international career for Australia. He's never really been secure. He's always playing for the next test match. He's always playing for the next game. He's been given heaps of chances. Now, I was kind of thinking, like, I wonder if he had known that he would play, I don't know how many ODIs he played, 30? Mm. How many tests he played? 10, 15? Mm. Maybe something like that. But if he knew he was going to get those games, he might have relaxed into it a bit more, because there's clearly a talent, there's clearly a player in Mitch Marsh. Yet consistently, it doesn't seem to quite work out at the international level. I find that interesting. I just look at this middle order for Australia they've got at the moment with no Maxwell on the side. They've got Carey batting up there and they had Darcy Short in this game. They had Wade.
Seven.
And then they had Marsh. It's not quite a very, very good ODI side, is it?
I don't know, man. I think go to sleep for a while.
Fucking give a
wake
shit
up
about
with
this.
The Champions Trophy next year and then the World Cup. It's probably a bit grim, isn't it? But like, how can you analyse a side with like Darcy Short at 7 or whatever? They're just giving guys a game and that's completely fine. Mm. And it happens while we're asleep and I hope we wake up and someone's done something good next.
Well, it's like when they played that ODI series, India, first game, wake up, 10 wickets, didn't watch
you
it.
Beauty.
Fuck you, beauty. How
you
good
absolutely,
is that?
Oh, gee, they're coming a long way, these boys.
Yeah, you're just on your way to the bus to work and it's going to be a great day.
Yeah. And Australian cricket's back.
Fuck, we've been back so many times the last 2 years.
Man, I love being
sandpaper. Yeah. Speaking of sandpaper, Pez, that third match of the T20 series, Australia won that one comfortably as well. They bowled out South Africa again for under 100 twice in the three-game series.
So we're good at that.
I think we're good at that.
Well, that's fine because there's a T20 World Cup coming up, so we can have a look at those games. Plus, we won. So.
No, it was Ali Martin, friend of the show, Ali. He said Australia's got to be favourites going to the World Cup. You look at the side, it's a good side.
Yeah.
Hard to argue. But Australia's never been good at T20s and never taken it properly seriously.
Yeah. Are we still going to have nicknames on the back?
Yeah. Are we still doing that?
Yeah.
Bo Webster should have been the team if that's the case.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. It wouldn't be too far away. Yeah. Return to the scene of the crime, he goes. New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, return for the third one.
Yeah.
They're good Australia. Like, Smith came in at 5 this time.
Right.
Instead of 3. I think they gave Carey a stick or something like that.
Yeah.
He came in at 5 with less than 5 overs to go and hit 20, like 2 sixes in the last over. So he can do that now.
Yeah.
It's not like, he just sort of nurdles and nudges them around or whatever, controls the innings. He can now do that. Mm. And then I guess the other one that was good was Agar 3 for again. So he's actually had a very good series.
Yeah. Finch got player of the series and he was it's been embarrassing receiving this when Agar's clearly been the best player.
That must be the best speech to give ever.
So satisfying. So I'll take the award and the residual income from that or whatever the prize was. Yeah. A bottle of champagne.
Didn't even want it.
Yeah.
I can still get it and I didn't even want it.
Yeah.
Didn't think I should get it.
Why did Finch get it? He batted quite well.
I can't remember. Probably did something.
Couple of good catches.
Thanks for tuning in.
Set some fields.
Thanks for tuning in to this show. Smith and Warner announced. So basically, like New Orleans then created all of this run on conversation about where we've come since sandpaper and whatnot. And the thing that's like on the horizon is the ending of Smith's leadership ban. That happens in March. So Smith was a two year leadership ban.
Yeah.
And so that happens in March. And
I can't believe that's been 2 years.
Yeah.
It's flown by for me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. That's nice. And then Warner's obviously banned for eternity from Australian internationals as well as Australian domestic cricket.
Yeah.
And yet, meanwhile, like Smith's been appointed Rajasthan Royals captain, Warner and Welsh Fire captain in the 100. It's like everyone's trolling Australia by announcing these guys' captains. Warner, Sunrisers Hyderabad captain as well.
Yeah.
And they asked Smith about, like, there was a big article today saying, like, Smith downplays wanting to be captain. All he actually said was, I'm just really chilled about it. So I don't think that necessarily rules him out, of wanting to do it. And I think if you listen to his interview. Oh, sorry, it's Maurice Duffy, his mind coach. Adam Collins, friend of the show, did a great piece on him, City Morning Herald a few months ago, and they did one on The Final Word as well, their podcast, with Jeff. And like Maurice Duffy was like, who's his mind coach, was like, oh, I think he'd do a really good job being captain again. I doubt he'd be saying that unless, you know, Smith was in agreement that he'd do that again. So I think Smith would probably be keen to take it up again. And then Warner, yeah, it's interesting. Like Warner's managers now come out, James Erskine's come out and said, like, I'd have to gauge the public mood as to whether we could lift the ban on Warner. Because when you think about it, like if you think about legacy and all that sort of shit, mm-hmm. like...
And I do.
And I do. And I think I wake up in the morning and I think about it a lot, mm-hmm. legacy.
Legacy.
It'd be pretty, like, it is a big stain if you just, like, you achieve all these things in your career and it's like, yeah, but you were banned from ever captaining domestic. Like, that's like grade cricket too.
Yeah, because you can't captain Rainey Peets.
I don't know. That's true. It'd be fucking funny if it was true.
What if he wanted to play a bit of threes later in his career?
Yeah, no.
Just come back, play a bit of threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving people around the field, the umpire has to stop the game. Yeah.
Dave, what have you done there?
Yeah.
Mate, I scored 335 in a test match.
Yeah.
No, you can't do that in third grade here.
Yeah, that's rants. Right. Yeah, exactly. Mike Whitney's captain. Why is he playing threes?
Well, I mean, but it's a quite good side.
Yeah, it's a good side.
Good side. Yeah. But Warner captained in the Bangladesh Premier League last year, so he was almost captain immediately after the ban. Oh, he actually captained during his ban, his playing ban.
Yeah.
So Smith is going to captain again.
Like, is he?
Yeah. I'm convinced of it. Like, okay. Why wouldn't he? Because like who is after Payne?
Oh, well, I mean, we talked about
yeah.
How good a leader is he actually? I mean, and I'm not.
I don't
saying
think he's
that
a. I don't think no. Rhetorically, I don't think he's a particularly good leader.
Yeah.
I think.
Why would he want to do it again? Just for the honor of it.
Yeah, legacy.
Legacy.
Legacy. More koala rats.
What we wake up.
Yeah,
thinking about
he wakes up and thinks about that.
Yeah,
don't you reckon though? Like in your entire life is the game.
Yeah,
and when you're that good, you sort of your legacy building. It's like why LeBron went to the Lakers.
That's why.
It's like it's you're building the empire now.
Yeah,
can
I more mean, money in it?
Yeah, yeah. It's more about
what about the like the level of scrutiny he'd get reassuming the captaincy
for
again?
Like 6 months.
Okay.
Same as the Ashes.
Yeah.
You got to get through it.
White noise.
Booze. Like that video going around and like when Warner's walking down the, was it Manchester? And someone yells out, Warner, you fucking cheat. And he just like turns around and goes, woo! Two thumbs up. It's good. Yeah. They do that for a bit and then everyone.
Psychologist has got him to do that as a reflex.
Then everyone cracks on.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Smith and Warner and Bancroft, they've done their time. They were punished. I mean, we're going around the house. Yeah. We have a
well, you're the public mood. I mean, James Erskine will be listening to this. You are reflecting the public mood. He's gauging it. And what he's gauging is the public are open to Warner again. Even just lifting the ban.
I represent a small sect of...
No, you represent everyone.
Everyone? I just think like that, like their punishment was obscenely and disgustingly harsh. I think their lives were ruined unfairly for the best part of a year. How long were they banned for? Yeah, it was a year, wasn't it? They were banned for... playing cricket for 12 months.
I mean, I think it's fine to lift the... They were banned for 12 months. Yeah.
Mate, remember the stuff about, like, Smith was in New York and he had a phone, he was having a beer by himself.
Disgraceful.
Like, the way they were punished and treated is a fucking disgrace. Mm. That's my view. I think it was so unfair
Moral panic, lynch mentality.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, mate. And
lynched.
So, and so, like...
Barabbas.
Should Smith never captain again because of the ban? No, I think he should be allowed to captain.
Well, he's
allowed. But I don't think he's the best captain. I don't think he's the best leader.
Warners are not allowed to. Anything about that? Just like literally, like even if we wanted to have you, even to fill in the Big Bash or something, if someone went down injured, you are still not permitted.
Mate, this is all wrapped up in like why the story of three people knew about sandpaper is bullshit.
Mm.
Like, how can a guy never be allowed to do that again?
Mm.
And only a couple of people knew about it. That's rubbish. Mm. It's absolute rubbish.
Like, so you're going on the record?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Mm. I got no information about it, but like, played enough cricket, been in the dressing room, see how stuff works. Like, these guys have team meetings fucking 8 days a week. They live in cricket. Only a couple of people knew about it. Mm. Bullshit. Absolute rubbish. Anyway, he
that might have been a little cabal on the side of the dressing room.
Mate,
you know
it's
I mean?
Deep state stuff.
Come over here. Yeah,
secret
yeah.
corridors, couple yeah. WhatsApp groups. Yeah, yeah slide around.
Josh has always gone, jeez, fucking moving. How are you getting that going? Oh, sorry, mate. I want to give you plausible deniability. Yeah.
What's the password? What's the password, Josh, if you want to know? Anyway. Warner's he's never allowed to do it again, ever.
Mm.
I mean, like, I don't think he'd be in the conversation necessarily anyway, but, like, the fact that he's never allowed to do it again.
I think
it's
that
all,
should lift it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If everyone else is fine with it, I mean, everyone else around the world, they're like, yeah, captain, he's a good player. He's good round the group. He's professional. He leads, whatever. Yeah, he's good.
That's interesting. Well, apparently Erskine's like, his manager says, look, after chat about it with Dave, because obviously they've never chatted about it before, he's just making a guess and talking in the media about it. Mm-hmm. And then he says, I'd have to chat with Kevin Roberts, who'd then have to take it to the board,
right.
And the board would have to list reasons why not to lift the ban. That's interesting. Erskine's just dictated why that's the case.
Right, okay.
Not why you'd have to lift it. Why not? Yeah, he's a really good manager.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's interesting.
Hey, mate, New Zealand are smashing India in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's nearly over as we go to air, isn't it?
Yeah, I was looking at it before. They had lost their first wicket. So New Zealand were chasing 132.
Yep.
And they were none for 100, but then they just lost a wicket before we started recording. So they were one for 100 and something. Mm. So they won the first test match by 10 wickets. They're about to win this one by several more wickets. Mm. Amazing. Like, India's still the number one test team in the world. All the stars are there. Kohli, couple of failures. Obviously can't do it in New Zealand.
Well, I mean, just
eyebrow stuff. Those my eyebrows.
Well, your eyebrows are going way up, up the ceiling at the moment. Virat Kohli, 38 runs in 4 innings this series against New Zealand, an average of 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
When will India drop him from the test team? He's dead weight.
This is... I don't have any numbers for this, but I have a feeling like he's had a little bit of a lean period from the World Cup in all forms. I mean, he's an incredible player, hashtag Kohli. And he will bounce back and he'll average a million for the rest of his career. But I just feel like he's just in a little bit of a lean patch for the last like 6 months. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's just my perception. A couple of low scores, the ODI series, I think he did well in the third game. But before then, Zampa got him out a couple of times. Like, I don't know, I just feel like he's struggling a little bit. But then he'll come to Australia at the end of the year and he'll score a million runs and he'll be the best player ever.
Series against India next summer will be good. I think it's going to be a very good series. Yeah. It's a different way of saying what I first said. I just said the same thing twice. Nice. So, Kohli will be back, won't he? I don't know. I think kudos to New Zealand. They play good cricket on their home wickets.
Mm-hmm.
They play cricket that like matches those conditions. And you know, isn't the story that like, speaking of legacy, the way to become great as a side is to find ways to win overseas. And it really adds extra weight to those teams that do manage to do it against really good sides. So when India beat Australia last year, pretty good. Yeah, okay, it didn't happen because Smith and Warner weren't there. That didn't actually happen. But that was a good result. Australia retaining it in England, very good result, you know, against a pretty good side. So, it just goes to show India haven't been able to do it in New Zealand. Well done to New Zealand. So, I don't know.
England,
time to change the toss.
England, yeah, good point, yeah. And can someone write in and tell us what ball they use in New Zealand, please? Mm. No one corrected this last week. Is it the Raiders? Is it the Raiders ball they're using? Compound. I want to know. The compound, the red
and
king.
White.
Red and white ball. Maybe a gaffer tape on the tennis ball.
Stinking.
Slazenger. They were just mentioning balls
Shame
now.
One ball.
Fucking hell. Fuck me.
Do you ever pick up tennis balls from the ground?
Here we
go. And work out whether it's a service station tennis ball or like a championship tennis ball.
You
from
can,
like a proper,
yeah, you can decide on the quality by the texture of the ball.
Yeah.
And the smell, the furriness of the ball.
Yeah. Well, do you find the tennis ball championship balls, mm-hmm. where you open it out of the can, smell the can, one of the best
one
five
of the
smells
best.
In the world?
Yes.
What
are the four others? Name them.
Not right now.
In order.
Now you've just thrown me. But the tennis ball championship balls are actually not good for backyard cricket. They don't jive with grass.
Yeah,
very well. They need a really hard surface to work.
Yeah.
Whereas the service station tennis balls often do a little bit more.
Yeah,
they grip a bit better.
Yeah,
yeah.
I find that the championship balls, like I'm talking like a Wilson straight out of the can or a Slazenger, depending on your ball
tennis
preference.
Tennis ball
bounce. Tennis ball bounce. Exactly what I was going to say. Because it's softer. It's spongier. So there's no zip in it.
Mm.
Easier to play.
Yeah.
Sit on
it
the
doesn't.
Back
the ball
dog.
Doesn't slide on. You sit on the back dog. Yeah. Just wait. Mm. Yeah. A bit slow off the deck. It makes for boring cricket.
Front dog with backyard cricket on grass is a hazardous proposal.
Absolutely.
Because you're getting hit in all the ribs somehow.
Yeah. And that's why Australians are back foot players.
I think that's how it starts.
30 years ago when we had backyards.
That's right. Now it's just indoor stuff.
Now it's indoor stuff. You get on the front, still mainly floorboards.
Yeah.
Ball slides on.
Which should be okay.
And you're in a hallway, so there's a lot more straight.
You got to hit straight. Yeah. Unless like you're living in a sort of abstract apartment where there's could be some corridors, you sort of flick it through. Because like when you hit a ball, you want to see it run.
Yeah.
Which is one of the more frustrating things when you're batting in nets training, where you hit a ball and you would like to see that run.
Exactly.
One of the most satisfying things, you hit the ball back past the bowler.
That's right.
Accidentally, sure, leading edge, but like it hits one of the ankles of a guy wanting to bowl.
That's right, and you hear
satisfying.
A crack.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, that's why we need more people to buy open plan living houses as well, because there's a bit more inside, there's a bit more space either side of the wicket, presuming you're playing right in the middle of the house.
Do you ever play in the office?
Yeah, a little bit.
But you're only ever playing for like half an over.
Yeah.
You can't get through a spell in the office because someone either ruins it or you're at your place of work and so you have to go back to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The last time I played like backyard or any kind of hybrid cricket seriously was when I was about 19, 20, so playing a fair bit of grade cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it would have been 18 or 19, living with my dad at the time. And the night before, Australia had played Pakistan in the opening match of the World Cup.
Incredible memory.
And I'd gone to the pub with my mate and we'd had 1,000 drinks, as you did at the time.
Yeah.
So triple, quadruple parked. It was problematic drinking.
Yeah.
And watched Andrew Simons, like biff Pakistan around. Oh, that was
the South Africa World Cup, yeah.
Yeah. And, Was it? No, 03.
03.
And,
oh, fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's fucking scary.
Yeah.
And Waqar Yunus beamed Simons at one point. I found it hilarious. So we're playing in the backyard the next day.
Yeah.
And with a Shane Warne ball, and I just did it to my mate.
Yeah.
And my dad was working up on the balcony. And it was the last time I think I properly got in trouble from my parents. Like, I beamed my mate.
How old were you? 20.
18.
18, okay, yeah, right.
And,
and
my dad just must have looked up and seen me just beam my mate and sconed him. And my mate thought it was very funny.
Yeah, rightfully
so. My dad actually hauled me up.
Oh, my God.
Dad's workers' comp lawyer. So he was worried about Tim's eyes and his ability to work. And I got
a hazard.
Well, yeah, and so you know that feeling where like there's nothing better than suppressed laughter. But basically, my dad dressing me down, while my friend was in my eye line, but behind my dad laughing. That was that's burning my memory.
Was he annoyed with the morality of the decision?
Yeah, well, I think my dad. It was actually quite insulting to my friend because my dad was basically telling me like, as a cricketer, can you not be so like aggressive towards your friend and actually endanger him with your bowling. So it was a backhanded compliment from my dad. He didn't realize the social dynamics of what was going on.
Sure.
He was just trying to protect my mate's eyes.
Yeah.
But so I guess all's well that ends well.
So when you're 18...
Years later, my dad would act for that friend and I got to sit in the conference while dad asked him about his behavior. So, you know, I got one back.
Sure.
Yeah.
So when you're 18, you subscribe to the Darren Lehman, you know, mode of aggressive, hard cricket.
That was the time, wasn't it? 03. Yeah. Well, still, yeah.
But you're also a big Waqar fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. Yes, I have nothing further to add to that. I was.
Now I'm interrogating you.
Yeah, that's right. You're a Waqar fan, correct?
And isn't it so, Sam, that Trent Copeland just got 300 test wickets for New South Wales? He got 300 test wickets for New South Wales. Good on you, Coach. 300 test wickets. Went past Brett Lee just now and Craig McDermott. Coach got 300 wickets. He's now fourth all-time list.
Yeah.
He's behind Lawson, McGill, Matthews.
Correct.
Not in that order.
That's impressive. Just past Steve O'Keefe got 300 last week as well, so he must have taken a bag and gone past Steve O'Keefe.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, Copeland's been amazing. I mean, even when we were playing and he got called up to the Blues side, like at 22 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like...
And he'd been bowling for 6 months.
Yeah, 120s.
Yeah.
This bloke, how's this bloke get a game? 120s and 300 wickets. And yeah, even Jeff Lawson was an express, and obviously Greg Matthews and McGill are spinners. So just goes to show that, once again, you don't need to bowl 140s. All those guys play for Australia. But still...
Helps.
It helps.
Hey, Slug Webster hit 187. But Tassie?
Slugly.
I just want to say Slug, any opportunity.
In front of the Test captain as well.
Oh, yeah.
The Slug, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good round of Shield cricket.
How cult can we make him that he starts playing Test cricket? It's just so fun to say, Slug. 187 with a Slug.
I reckon, like, you know, when you sit in the pavilion and someone hits a good shot, nothing would feel better than just saying, shot Slug. Nothing would feel better.
More than my own runs.
More than anything in the world.
Well, Seb Gotch also hit two hundreds back to back. Cameron Green did 158.
Yeah.
Is he the new Bradman?
Yeah.
Cameron Green, big raps on him. All these young guys doing well.
I love this new genre of article that's come out where it's there was the ensuing Fox Sports article speaking about whether Cameron Green was indeed the new Flintoff. And then the article goes on to say, we're all a bit obsessed with Flintoff, aren't we? Australia likes to don these people. So it was kind of being meta about the question of whether he was a new Flintoff, while also asking whether he was.
Yes.
So just covering both sides there. Very skillful connection between Cameron Green and Andrew Flintoff. And, and I've seen a few people now come out. You can always find them on Twitter and stuff saying, well, you know, what reason do they not have to take him to Bangladesh? He scored more hundreds than anybody else in the Shield. It's like, well, you know, he hasn't bowled, for example. So maybe just give him a bit of time.
Hilton Cartwright could get another go.
Yeah.
He bowled in test matches.
A good little player. So
kept up the stumps.
Yeah,
the SCG.
I was there when you did that. Yeah, that was good. And it wasn't it like Steve Smith. Steve Smith had never seen him bowl.
Yeah,
that was the game. That was the game where we watched where Matt Renshaw hit a ton, and we were standing next to Ian Chappell, who was looking up our Orioles scores. He was looking up baseball box scores on ESPN.
Renshaw went past his maiden Test century.
Didn't look up.
The SCG got like 180 that day. Yeah. He didn't look up.
Get him on the show.
Oh, seventh inning.
Does anyone know Ian Chappell? I'd love to get him on the show. just on that, he goes as well. So Australia had a big loss to the England Lions at the MCG, and Curtis Patterson hit 94 not out. And there's a quote from Curtis that I enjoyed here. He said, and this was in the paper, I found it quite difficult. There were a few divots in the wicket and I thought they bowled really well. I thought they challenged our stumps and challenged our defence really well. Kudos to them. I think we were really outplayed there. Probably the better team won the game. And I just love... There's nothing
right
better than
to
describing how hard the conditions were after 94 red ink.
Some of those guys are swinging both ways. Yeah. You know, they're taking the stumps a lot. Good pace on them, set their plans
Just challenging the right areas. Outplayed.
You know, I got 94 today, but you know, could have been a different story another day. You know, I did get 94 today.
And undefeated.
Curtis is good.
Love him. KP.
But mate, all this stuff is just fitting into the Shield stuff where it's like, some guys doing well. Points are weird though. Look at like New South Wales won 42.36 points. Yeah. What?
Good number of points at this point of the season.
Well, I've always said that. You've got to get them before Christmas, and after Christmas, you start picking up those like 6.8, 6.9 kind of points.
Points. Yeah. That's what you're looking for.
That's what you're looking for.
Well, that looks...
None of our mouths move, then, for 30
seconds.
You're
just rocking back and forth as you're saying that. Looks like New South Wales are in the final.
Looks
unless
like
there's
it.
A weird combination of bonus point things happen. And that final, if they do host it, is it Wollongong?
Oh, okay, why?
I don't know. Someone else using the SCG, probably the Swans AFL.
Yeah,
I guess.
Okay.
If in doubt, it's probably AFL.
Mate, I'm looking forward to the Australian team getting back here for those ODIs against New Zealand.
Should be good.
Yep.
Well, they are wearing yellow lids for that. Did you see that?
They're always going to get me in. They'll get me in. Okay, I'm in for that.
Canary lid. Not hard, was it?
No.
It wasn't hard. I mean, the bushfire game could use them.
Yeah.
Anyway, yellow lids. I'm actually going to put a call out to Cricket Australia at the moment. If you'd like us to promote that, all we're asking for you to do is to furnish us with two yellow lids and we will record the show and post it out with us wearing the lids in its entirety.
I'd fucking kill for a yellow lid.
Yeah.
More than a baggy green. Because I'm an idiot. Seb Gotcha's on the show.
Okay, some numbers here for you. Higos, specifically. Yep. 23 first class matches, 1,000 runs there. Highest score of 102 not out, averaging 40-odd, 38. 2 tons, 650s, coming up to 100 dismissals. Bunch of great contributions with the white ball too, where he burst onto the scene with a fashion statement that we all remember. I'm talking about Seb Gotch. Seb, welcome to the Great Cricketer.
Boys, thanks for having me.
Strong boys to kick off, I like
boys.
It. Seb, always asking about grade cricket to kick things off. You know, what's your relationship to grade cricket? I understand you play at the highly prestigious Melbourne Cricket Club. Maybe just for the audience out there, describe the club, describe your relationship to the code at that level.
Yes, very prestigious club, Melbourne. I play there because it fast-tracked me through the MCC membership process. It's a very enticing little add-on. They're a great club. I've been with them for a long time, and I actually haven't played with them in probably 2 years now, so
that must feel good.
They can have a hit, but I'm also pretty happy to not go back there and have a hit as well.
It's bittersweet, isn't it? You want to play and you also
confusing.
Don't.
Yeah,
a little bit like that.
Can you maybe just elaborate on why you don't want to play, just for our own entertainment?
Yep.
Just to being on a Saturday, if they could change the day to maybe a Wednesday or a Thursday, I'd probably be more inclined to play, but yeah, I need a weekend at some point.
Fair enough. Apart from the entire winter, of course. Obviously speaking a lot about dad stuff here, Seb. Obviously, this is the dad podcast that you've come onto. But your dad was former AFL footballer Brad Gotch. I just wonder, like, how much of a disappointment you are to him, given that you're now a professional athlete in the country's biggest sport. And also a follow-up question, if you were an AFL club, which one would you be?
I disappoint him in more ways than one, just not through my sporting selection. But I reckon he coaches at Collingwood now. So he did play with St Kilda, but he's moved over to Collingwood. And I'm a pretty diehard Pies fan as well. So, I think I'd have to stay associated with the Maggies.
I just noticed on your Wikipedia, the first source of many that I looked up when researching for this interview, but it mentions literally in the first paragraph the TAC footy team that you played for, the Oakley Chargers. I just want to know, are you a failed footy player like most of the Victorian cricket side who then had cricket as a fallback and have become rather good at it?
No, but I still tell people that that's absolutely the case. I played a couple of games at TAC and probably in about 2012, Greg Chappell came up with a rumour that I got drafted by GWS. I'm not sure where he got it.
What? That's...
He wrote an article about it somewhere. And it was in the Herald Sun. So you'll be able to find it. If you can't find it, I'll send it to you. It's up on the wall. But it was a bit strange. So yeah, I ran with that for a little while. And they were asking me on commentary in a couple of games what it was like playing with GWS. And I'm lucky enough now to be considered a multi-sportsman.
So are you suggesting that like Greg Chappell has put out into the public domain while he was like the talent like development guy that you were drafted by GWS so as to like kind of fast-track you through the cricket system?
Correct. Word for word, he said I've made my way back to cricket after having a stint with Greater Western Sydney Giants in the AFL. So,
is he mixing up with Alex Carey, possibly?
Yeah. Wicketkeepers.
Potentially, yep. But we don't need to look into it that far. We just have to take the facts as Greg sees it. And if Greg thinks it's true, then I'm happy to think it's true as well.
And so just on saying, you know, you like to pump up your TAC form and stuff. Like if you're on the circuit in Melbourne, which I'm sure you are at some point, you know, mid-20s guy, good-looking fella, you know, will you be telling people you'd play for Oakley before you tell them that you play for Victoria and the Melbourne Star?
Well, you're asking as though I could potentially do that. I've actually done that multiple times already. So it's usually my go-to. I actually played state footy as well for Victoria, so I always throw that one in there as well. But the cricket usually comes later. Not many girls are too impressed by a wicketkeeper who averages 20 and keeps in short sleeves.
No, we did receive your LinkedIn profile link that you sent us before the interview, so we appreciate that. Seb, you're obviously a proficient golfer as well, I believe. So, I mean, you're obviously just one of those guys who's naturally talented at all sports. I mean, are there any sports that you're bad at that if you probably turned your hands out for 3 weeks, you'd turn pro in that as well?
No, I'm not that great at golf. I'm pretty weak mentally, so that seems to be a significant downfall in that game. But I do like my sport. I probably pay too much attention to sport going through school, which, in a couple of years when I'm retired, might come back to haunt me when I'm looking for a job. But
couple of years, you're 26.
Yeah, well, things are a bit grim, but we'll take that as it comes, and when I have to deal with that, we'll. We'll attack it head on.
Because you obviously started your journey to the professional realm of cricket. You were at the Australia Centre of Excellence. I want to know what your experience was like there and sort of what the Centre of Excellence is like. I mean, is it like a laboratory of like a Marvel movie where, CA are trying to do weird tests on a 6'8 guy who's also good around the group, or is it just like an academy where blokes are just hitting heaps of balls?
No, it's a little bit of both, but it's more an academy.
It's just another laboratory.
I didn't do the full winter like a few of the boys do. They go up there right throughout the Melbourne winter and just play, train, hit balls pretty much every day and have one day off a week. So I just did part-time stuff and went up over there Christmas and did a little bit of work there. But, yeah, it's beneficial. It's great to have access to different coaches. But I think I get a little bit more out of having a bit of time off and refreshing my mind and body and then getting back into it when pre-season comes around. Mm.
Speaking of the minds, Seb, I feel like wicketkeepers have to like uniquely eyeball their opposition when it comes to working out how to like fast track your way to the top. I mean, you've obviously got great competition in Sam Harper. You both play for the same club team, so I don't know who plays twos there. When you're both available, but do you find when you're trying to work your way through, you have to really work out whether you want to change clubs or change teams to like snake your way to the top? I mean, even. Think about like Adam Gilchrist, for example. He had to leave New South Wales to get a go ahead of Phil Emery. Good decision, New South Wales, I felt there. But yeah, like what's the mindset there in terms of how you kind of make sure you're giving yourself the best shot at being the number one wherever you're going?
Yeah, it's interesting. I stopped keeping before I really started keeping for Victoria. I had a couple of years off it. And then we, in the space of about 2 weeks, we had four keepers go down to injury. So I think Wadey broke his collarbone, and then Pete Hanscom had a sore finger, and then Harps got hit in the head, and even Aaron Eyre, who was another backup keeper, he got injured as well. So it eventually got to the point where they said, we need a keeper, we don't have anyone in the state, can you do it? And that was how I got my first game against WA. And Andrew McDonald at the time, we were using the Duke's ball over at the Wacker, and it was a bouncy wicket, and I think I might have led to about 30 buys in the match. It could be a record. But he came up to me halfway through the game and he said, you'll never keep Victoria again for as long as I'm in charge.
Oh my God.
But for some reason, the next week they picked me again, and we eventually went on that year and we won the title. And we still joke about it to this day that he thinks I'm the worst keeper he's ever seen. But it wasn't for me. I didn't really have to leave. I didn't actually have to do anything. I just had to be breathing at the time of selection, and they picked me and put me in there. So for people that have to leave, it could be pretty difficult. But yeah, my sort of scenario was a pretty fortunate one.
Yeah, it sounds like you basically a Make-A-Wish participant.
Honestly,
to get to. we've been told by a couple of people, said, you know, we're talking sort of Big Bash and keeping in the short sleeves, that you are trolling people by keeping in the short sleeves. We were at Optus Stadium this year.
Yeah,
we saw you there, and you're warming up in a long sleeve shirt, and then you took to the field keeping in short sleeves. So, can you confirm or deny that you are trolling?
I'm not actually trying. I used to keep in short sleeves in junior cricket.
Yeah.
And my first game for the Stars, Stephen Fleming was coach, ex New Zealand captain, and he heard a whisper that I kept in short sleeves, and he walked up to me and he said, "Are you going to do that today?" And I said, "Oh, I don't really know. I'll grab whatever tops in my locker." And he goes, "No, if you do it in club cricket, you're going to do it out here." So I went and did it out there and got off the ground, and my phone, I was actually trending on Twitter. I had that much abuse that I probably set a new record. I actually had a guy really get stuck into me, some pretty heavy stuff. And I clicked on his profile and it said, "Loving family of three beautiful girls." Loving father of three beautiful girls. And I thought, what have I done to this bloke to deserve this? These poor girls at home must be coughing an absolute mouthful because I've done this to him.
Yeah.
What can I ask, like, what exactly he was saying to you?
It was more along the lines of how much I let the game down.
Oh my God.
And yeah, and how he'd been watching it for a long period of time, and he just told me that I'm not bigger than the game, even though I think I am. A different view of that, but it was great. As soon as I saw that, I knew I was doing the right thing, and I had to keep going with it.
It actually reminds me, my dad said the same thing to me once when I nicked off in a fours game, and he said, "You've let the game down, you let yourself down, you let your family down." Beautiful daughter, beautiful father, three girls, Collingwood fan. I mean, this is probably our fault as well, because, you know, highlighting the yuckness of keepers in short sleeves. So, and anytime you take the field, we're still getting notifications blowing up about, oh, mate, the bloody Stars keepers in short sleeves. You've seen this? Yeah, he's been playing the Big Bash for 4 years. Yeah. So, sorry about that.
No, need to apologise.
No, it's all good.
I guess speaking of ill-advised trolling, one of the big on-camera moments this year, one of the big on-camera stars, apart from one indiscretion, was Marcus Stoinis, who was doing a roaming Stoinis thing or whatever after the game. You know, obviously it's not enough to have a job as an athlete on the field. You have to also take people's jobs off the field as well. But he went up to you and he called you a little boy, and it only got replayed about 37 times. I bet you appreciated that.
Mm.
Look, most of the stuff that he said was pretty spot on. He did walk up to me before the camera started rolling, and he asked me very politely if I could stay there. He wanted to ask me a question. I was hovering around waiting for him to come over and ask a genuine question. He didn't actually ask anything. He just pulled my pants down on live TV too much. But that's the story. And he's got a lot on his plate. So if I can help out in any way, I'm more than happy.
It's predatory from the Stoinis. Yeah. Now, is it weird being mic'd up during a game when you're literally, you know, trying to win a professional game of sport, and then like you have to listen to Howie throw down a couple of zingers on air? I know the game when it was actually the game when Stoinis got 100 million runs, whatever, in that game against the Sixers, and you were mic'd up, and then you were keeping, and then like the mic dislodged and end up somewhere near your box. I mean, it must be kind of weird being like wearing like a battery pack and a mic pack and have a microphone in your ear. Is it distracting?
It's not too distracting. I actually think it helps me concentrate. If I know that they're crossing to me and a couple of balls, it sort of it makes you really switch on, and you don't want to make any mistakes. You probably shouldn't want to make any mistakes at any stage, but
sure,
even more so before the commentators are coming. But that game, the battery pack slipped out, and it's sort of up around your shoulder, and it slipped out. And I asked the umpire if we could have some time while I get it fixed up, and he said, "Nah, you're behind already, and obviously you get fined if you're too far behind." So I had to put it in my pants, and Dunkey came over, and he actually grabbed it and put it. I asked him to put it in my jocks, and where he put it was, it was in my jocks, but it didn't need to be so far. And there is a little antenna on that little box as well that can sometimes get into some random areas, which it did, and I felt pretty bad for whoever had to clean that up or put it away.
Is Ben Dunk bored? He's wearing the camping hat. Yeah. He's throwing battery packs in your box.
Yeah.
I think he's just had enough of cricket. He's just going around, going through the motions, just having a couple of wins, a couple of personal wins.
He doesn't mind. However he can contribute, he's happy to do it. And I think that was a great example of how good a team man he is.
Good answer.
I mean, a serious cricket question. 100 debut 100 against New South Wales recently in the Shield in a win against them. They're top of the table. Then you go again against Queensland last week, coming in when you guys were 5 for 100. Has something changed with you in terms of your batting? Has something clicked, or what's behind the excellent scores?
Oh, I don't think anything's clicked. I got dropped on a duck in the second game, which was pretty consistent for me to nick off that early. And even in the first game, I think Neville put me down on hands as well. So I'm still providing the chances I've always been providing. I've just been on the lucky end of a couple of missed opportunities. But, yeah, I, when you bat number seven or even number six, you sort of depend on the game scenario to give you an opportunity to make big runs. And being first innings, you know, the game had to be set up and there was plenty of time left out in the game. So, whilst I felt like I batted okay, I was definitely still on the back of some really good scenario batting and some pretty healthy team batting as well from the tailenders.
It's a pretty interesting time for wicketkeepers in the country because obviously Tim Payne is, you know, towards the end of his career. And then so Alex Carey is sort of said to be the next one, next cup of the rank. But, you know, as a wicketkeeper batsman who keeps scoring runs like you have in the last couple of digs anyway, you know, you must feel like you're actually not that far away from being right into the frame. I know Trent Woodhill has spoken very highly of you and has said that you're the next Australian wicketkeeper. But, I mean, you must feel like you're not that far away.
Trent Woodhill's sore to my dad, so he has to. whether he believes
sort
it
of,
another thing.
Sort but, of interesting,
I think from the last couple of weeks, I definitely feel closer, but I still feel a long way off. I look at Carey, he's keeping, he's batting, he's straight ahead of me. And that's not a modest thing, that's just a pecking order thing. And you've got to really work hard to get in the frame. And I think people are pretty quick to jump on you if you make a few good scores, but for me to feel comfortable going to that next level, there'd be a heap of work, a stack of work that I have to get through. And I'm happy just playing at Victoria and contributing there. And who knows, if five keepers want to fall over like they did to get my first Shield game, then more than happy for him to do it at the top as well.
Stephen Bradbury.
That's the guy. Seb, very, very generous answers there. Thanks very much for your time. I know you said you've got your brother's wedding on Saturday. So hopefully you're missing cricket for that, like we all do on Saturdays for weddings. And then, but hopefully, you know, you don't get dropped, as they always threaten. It never happens. Anyway, I'm off on a rant. Thanks very much for joining us, mate. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for having me, boys. Have a great day.
G'day, listeners. Louis Burke here with Generation Batuta, the stories that matter to you and the other five members of your share house. Open your ears and blow your minds as our weekly youth program brings you stories about pill testing, climate change, and a cheeky story about sex to make sure you listen until the end. I am, you are, we are Generation Batuta. Generation Batuta. Tune in now on Desert Rock FM, or if you don't live in Batuta, listen free, only on Spotify.
Great to be working with our very good friends, the Batuta Advocate, once again, Pezza.
The Batuta Advocate have done it again, he goes. The boys have done it again. They're always putting excellent stuff out. Yes. Unparalleled stuff. And this is a new podcast for your consumption. Hear new episodes of Generation Batuta each week only on Spotify.
Pez, we're very fortunate to have a lot of Australian companies supporting our thing, and we support them as well. Budgie Smuggler, another great case in point. All Australian made.
Australian-made
budgie smugglers.
And we've been given a directive this week.
Oh, yeah? Goes. What's that?
And this is in line with some of the conversation we've been having as well. Mm-hmm. Footy season's coming up.
Good point.
Budgie goes gangbusters in footy season. Let's face it, Australia goes gangbusters in footy season. You know, as I think it was the CEO of KO Sports said a few months ago. Cricket's a bit antediluvian, as they say. It's sort of up and down. There's no real schedule to it. But when footy starts, bang, you'll see all the schedules coming out. NRL 360's on. AFL 360's on every night. 3 to 4 hours every night, bang, you can schedule the shit out of that.
Good
and
point.
Same with custom smugglers. Budget smugglers.
Tenuous,
you got a footy, you got a footy team you like? You know, Richmond Tigers. For example, Richmond Tigers, the Tigers to some, West Tigers in the rugby league, or the Oakley Chargers, as is the case with Seb Gotch.
Do you reckon you can get some Deccan Chargers?
I'm sure you can. All you have to do is set, well, I mean, make sure there's no logo pinching or anything like that. No one would be doing that. But I guess you can get all of those things at budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Shall we roll straight into hashtag AskTGC?
Yeah, why not?
Are we still doing it?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, cool. Have you stopped recording or is this... Oh, we're still going?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're still going. Professional operation we're running here. Pez as well, that time of the year, rolling into the end of season awards thing.
We've got a few offers.
Yeah.
Booking up.
I think there's this opportunity. We might be going to New Zealand, actually.
Right.
Have I told you about that?
No.
I might have mentioned it fast. Well, it might be happening. Still.
Let's just
actually, someone wrote it. Yeah, that's wrote about it. Yeah. Have another business meeting live on air between where I'm asking you whether the mics are on or not. Some guy wrote from England.
Yep. Yeah, if you guys are over here.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Couple of jokes.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, it's all available or all contactable at greatcricketer.club. What's the email again?
greatcricketer@gmail.com. More professionalisation.
Sure. All good stuff. Hey, this one comes in from Darcy Bakes.
Yeah, there's some good ones this week.
I'm not sure if this was a question. He DM'd us and he said, I'm not even sure if we should have been using his name, but I have and it's too late now.
This is good.
Hey, lads, leap year boy here. I literally have a birthday every 1,460 days, and I spent this one playing cricket. Cheers.
I really enjoyed what receiving a life. That. Yeah, someone else actually wrote in this week to say, the next leap year game on a Saturday is in 2048. Cheers.
Did we do a tweet or something about leap years?
No, I don't know.
It's just on the mind.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I guess the next one's with me then. Here goes, from Anonymous.
Yep.
And the subject is #AskTGC, please keep me anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
In my under-14s team that I coach, one of the kids was run out after assuming the ball had gone to the boundary. He then proceeded to throw his bat and then take his gear off while walking off the ground, leaving it all in a trail behind him. This is the third consecutive game in which he has been run out and fourth time for the year. Being local to the ground, he proceeded to simply walk home and not have to face his dad's disappointment. As coach, how should I react to this?
Okay, well, first of all, he should be celebrated for his dad being at the game then. And he walked home.
Well, first of all, write to us.
Write to us. Yeah,
grown man.
Write to us on the way home whilst he's walking home. So his dad's at the game and what didn't notice that his dad has just popped off home. His son has just popped off home to what in full whites, I presume.
Yeah.
Second of all, we saw this happen, this style of run that happened in that Pakistan series that Australia playing in the UAE. Was it Azhar Ali got run out that way? He nicked the ball down the third man, didn't run out. And then... Yeah,
and Tim Payne gleefully took the stumps.
He took the stumps, not just the bales, yeah. So it does happen. Three runouts in a row, four in a season. I mean, like, it's a truism that being run out is a shocking way to be dismissed in cricket. The cruelest of all the sports, in my opinion.
Well, the Mankad, I suppose it is run out.
Well, I guess it's a form of run out. But to commit this much of your life to playing a sport and then be run out, like, you must be terrified to leave the crease. You know, like
after that, yeah,
like
agoraphobia, but for batting,
same thing.
Not leaving the house,
same thing. Wait, isn't I'm thinking of agoraphobia when like that's the spiders.
What's arachnophobia.
That's arachnophobia. Yeah. Mm. Well, this is the scientific podcast you've tuned into.
Well done. Bales on next.
They run out though. Fuck me, four times in a year. That's a grim season.
There's something very artistic about like leaving a trail of kit behind you
as
you
walk something. Off the field. Like a snail.
You know, yeah, it's like,
a slug.
There's my bat. There's my gloves. Like a slug. Leave the slug behind you. Grim. Take your pads off, your thigh pad, your box, and they're all just in one line as you walk off the field. I mean, how should you react to it if the dad's at the game, the coach is there, and an under-14s kid walks home? Well, you're calling docs. Department of Community
Services. It's like a Banksy. Like it's some sort of artwork, like a Banksy. Just like
we've got an idea about that, but we can't have this business meeting on air.
Trail of destruction. Yeah. Didn't you once, you were talking about you figured out how many times you bat in a year, and then in terms of like, you were talking about your batting coach at the time.
Yeah.
And then like the number of times you bat in a year, washouts, not batting, and then like get a bad decision, get a good ball. So you only have like three good What is
something
that?
Like
I'm
that.
Doing
yeah.
poor man's version
it was
of
some,
it.
No, I mean, I have a loose memory of it as well. But yeah, there was like one of these, you know, things that you get like at the culture building sessions in July after doing 25 minutes of cardio.
Yes. And, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Boxing, that'll fix and, my yeah, weakness that's, short ball.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. A4 piece of paper. And I think it was, yeah, like a coach was explaining how like you probably, there's 20 matches in the year or so. So say 20 innings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's say you've got 3 washouts or something, 17. Let's say you get like a couple of bad decisions, maybe like, you know, you got 13, 12 innings or something like that. Then you probably like get yourself out maybe 10 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you probably only got room for about
those,
like 3 innings.
Games where like you have a hit, but you're only chasing a small total. Yeah. So it's like a 7-night out or a 15-night out or something.
That's right.
Yeah. So you have like basically 3 cracks a year.
Yeah.
And this guy's been run out 3 times.
Exactly.
So he's pissing it away.
Exactly.
Good luck next year though.
Good luck though. Yeah.
All the best.
Yeah. Call like, Docs.
Hey, this... Why does every week Docs get involved somehow in some capacity? This one also comes in from Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, lads, don't know if this is where I hashtag RTDC, but I'm doing it, going to do it anyway. Please, before I defame a child, can you please keep my identity anonymous? Can do. My younger brother goes to school with a promising young talent in the Sheffield Shield. For the sake of the story, let's call him Will Parker.
Two L's.
Two L's.
Yeah.
Last week, they had a school swimming carnival where students are encouraged to dress up in their house colours. Will took out the win for the best dress, sporting his entire Victorian kit. He followed the win by removing his lid and raised his bat as if he had just scored a maiden daddy in front of a packed Boxing Day crowd. What are your thoughts? I wasn't there, but I can't imagine everyone rejoiced.
Right, so just for the sake of the argument, he's calling him Will Parker
with
two L's. Incidentally, it was a Will Parker who debuted for Victoria last week
right.
with one L.
Ah, it's one
so
L.
So it's a different name, and this Will Parker with one L's in school.
Yeah, okay.
So
it could be coincidence.
Yeah, it's a coincidence. And
yeah, right.
Interestingly, there's a story of this Will Parker who just, I just looked this up, who was actually leaving his swimming carnival when he got the call up for Victoria. So this actually happened before the actual call up the Shield, but Will obviously has all of his Victorian gear. So he hasn't played for Victoria yet. He's turned up to his school swimming carnival
this
in full Victoria kit.
This is fucking amazing.
Yeah, that's what happened. It's obviously come through to us. So this Will Parker, who incidentally is meant to be a very good footy player too, but you don't even need to say that because when you're from Victoria. You prefer Aussie
hand
rules
and
then
yeah,
you just play a bit of cricket if you can for Victoria or Australia. And so Will's turned up to his swimming carnival in full kit. And he's been called best dressed. So he actually plays Victoria and he's worn his Victorian kit.
Yep.
If I can make that clear enough.
Mm-hmm.
And upon being announced the best dressed, he's taken off his lid. I wonder if he's taped over the lid.
So that's so that's how the story got better because like he's in full kit and I'm thinking like ODI kit for a start.
No.
So,
full Victoria kit. And he actually had a really good debut.
But then he's also got his lid on. That wasn't described in the story beforehand.
So okay. This is actually a really interesting question for me. Like,
it is an interesting question.
Is it funny or is it like you're in year 12 and you're clearly a massive, like you're clearly the king of the school.
He's peacocking.
He's peacocking massively.
Mm-hmm.
I remember like when watching Will Sutherland play for Scotch or whatever, it was just the peacock was, well, it was in full flight. The feathers were everywhere. What?
Plenty of blood in the peacock, yeah.
All right. No. That I'm not making that. Okay. So back to Will. Parker, is it too much peacocking or is it ironically funny? Depends the spirit in which he did it.
Well, we don't know him. I don't know him.
Yeah.
Also, did this really happen? Are you saying there was photos?
No, I'm not saying there's photos,
but
now know that there was an article saying that as he was coming home from the swimming carnival, he got the call to play Victoria. So there was a swimming carnival.
At least he was prepared. So he was prepared.
Yeah, his kid on.
Yeah. Are you being selected for Victoria? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
What's the thinking, though? You're in year 12. You're going to a swimming club. You're in year 12.
Yes.
So you're like, you're already the king of the school in a way.
Yeah.
And you're obviously in the Victorian cricket squad.
Yes.
And you go to the swimming club. I'm like, oh, they've got one for best dressed here, actually.
Yeah.
I might actually just wear my full Victorian
kit. There's only one thing I can wear.
If I was in year 12 and that was me, which it wasn't, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I turned up like in full New South Wales kit to school swimming carnival.
Mm.
I got a feeling a fair few people would be like, "You're a fucking knob."
That's not a good look. Yeah,
yeah.
But maybe
17.
But maybe I don't know. Like,
it's got,
hearing the story, reading the story, I'm like, that's one of the best things I've
ever
heard.
But
if I saw it,
people are prepared to be rare these days as well and be into themselves.
And roughly so, celebrate that. But
maybe in 2020 it works.
If he's funny and ironic and self-aware,
exactly
like Seb Gotch, I feel like was when we just spoke to him just now.
Yeah.
Then like I say, fair play. But if he's not,
if he does it in the 20th century, no good.
No good.
But if he does it in 2020, could be good. And he debuted really well too. So best of luck.
Well, we haven't solved anything there.
Yeah. Well, he did ask for some thoughts, I suppose. An anonymous person wrote in wanting to know what we
thought. Oh, that's another thing. Like, did that even happen? I wasn't there. He said, I wasn't there, but I'd imagine everyone... I can't imagine everyone rejoiced. So, did it even happen?
Yeah, right.
But the story's been pieced together. Mm. I don't know.
Might be from an enemy.
I like it.
In the school.
Mm.
Yeah.
Might have been from Seb Gotch.
Nice. Okay. Mac War writes in.
I've seen him before. He's coming before.
Yeah, he comes in. Hashtag AskTJC. Yeah, g'day, boys. I don't often remember my dreams, so it was a surprise to remember a particular dream that I had the other night. It was even more of a surprise to recall that it involved watching Ian Higgins playing professional cricket on the TV in the Big Bash, no less, he says.
Yep.
A conversation between myself and my dad ensues wherein my dad says, ah, yes, I know Ian Higgins. He's been smashing them around the park recently.
Yep.
Dream analysis is certainly an interesting vocation, but I'm worried about what analysing the implications of Higgos, brackets, and just Higgos, which I understand is rare to not have all three of you, close brackets, being in my dream, and the uncharacteristically enthusiastic praise from Dad, brackets, something entirely unfamiliar to me, close brackets, but give it your best shot anyway. Mm. Cheers.
Mm. Yeah, nothing weird about this at all. It's completely normal.
Oh, you've written it.
Macca. It's my burner account. Mac, he wrote this question a while ago.
An American Mark War.
He wrote this question a while ago, and you know, as tends to be the case, some can slip through the cracks from time to time, Pez, as you know. He followed up with a message this morning saying, you know, I realize you guys get heaps of questions, blah, 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 but I really need help with this one because it's the only one I'm not dreaming about my ex-girlfriend. Mm. And I thought, that's really funny.
Mm.
That's really funny.
And it happens to mention me playing Big Bash in someone's dream.
Yeah, I'm surprised this didn't come up earlier. I'm surprised this isn't in most weeks.
Well, I guess my question to you, it's hard for you to comment on what this might mean, but I suppose the first question is, I mean, Mac has divined that you've been smashing him around the park lately.
Yeah.
And smashing can mean a few things.
Sure.
Well, I mean, in cricket sense, it's hitting the ball hard, but I guess my question to you is, maybe Mac has felt through the reverberations of the earth that you've been smashing him a bit lately. And so I guess, Michael, have you?
Yeah, I've seen him pretty well recently. I feel like, you know, the thing of I could have played Big Bash. You know, when the Big Bash first came in, it was just like, oh, I could have made it. If T20 was around when I was going around, when I was a bit younger, I reckon I could have done that.
Well, sort of.
But you've heard the conversation of people saying that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I couldn't have done that.
Oh, you just need to make that clear.
Yeah. Okay. But I told you about my 99 in third grade last week, didn't I?
Mate, I had a dream last night. I was playing for St Kilda again, and Ashton Agar was there.
Why?
He was smashing around. We lost, but he was smashing around. There's a few other players. I can't remember who it was, other first-class players. I was batting with Ashton Agar, and he was, belting them everywhere, and I was not in any way. I was way out of form. And then I remember, like, having to justify my position in the side, and it started to get into,
verbally?
Yeah, to players. I was getting really antsy about it and saying, oh, what? I was starting to talk about some weird shit because it was a dream.
I like that sense of, like, a bargaining. You have to bargain your way. Like, there's a meeting with 10 other players and you have to bargain your way verbally into why you should be allowed in the team still.
Well, I think it was...
Stay in the WhatsApp group.
I was researching Seb Gotch and because of, like, you know, he's got a bit of an accent, like a Melbourne accent kind of thing, and I'm a bit big on Melbourne accents. A's sound like E's, E sounds like A's. You know, what number comes after 10 in Melbourne?
11.
Yeah, 11. And
11?
Yeah. And I was like, what school do you go to? You know, because you can sort of divine a few things there. He went to De La Salle, and then I saw that Ashton Agar went there. Then I'd forgotten that Ashton Agar was from Victoria. And I think maybe that's how he turned up in my dream.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
Do you reckon Agar's, the more time he plays, the more hat-tricks he gets in T20s, it kind of diminishes his 98 in the Ashes batting at number 11? I just wanted, in my mind, I wanted Agar to have that forever.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, now he's doing other stuff, other good things.
Mate, more than any other cricket moment or any movie, like that's one where I'd turn it on and want there to be a different result.
Different result.
I want him to get his 100. I want to watch it again and for him to go all the way. It was just so remarkable.
Mm. How come... And the way he got out, didn't nick off, didn't get a good seed, pull the ball to fucking semi-mid-wicket.
Yeah. Threw it away. When you come so far, he threw it away. And then obviously this is where the trivia buffs and hipsters go, gee, Phil Hughes batted well for 81, not out that time.
He did bat well that day.
Yeah, no, it did.
But do you reckon when Agar got out, he was like, oh, I'll get another chance here. I'll do this again.
Yeah.
But not number 11. Even if he started batting 5 for Australia, wouldn't be as good. Nothing would ever be as good as Ashton Agar's 98.
That's right. So that's what that dream means, Mac War.
Anonymous writes in, hashtag AskTJC. It's coming from email, and the email subject is divorce my only option? didn't.
Always look forward to reading those. Good subject line gets us in.
Yeah, it gets me in. Yeah. Gets me in.
Is it my only option? Let's see.
Dear the great cricketer, my wife's friend recently started dating a new guy and discovered he plays cricket. Naturally, my wife and her friend are excited by this development and now keen to play for both couple to go out together. And now keen to plan for both couple to go out together. As all cricketers know, being forced to meet another cricketer outside of the game is a huge cause for anxiety. Thoughts like, what if they're better than me? And what if they get me out? What if they once got me out? Race through my mind. I am doing what any normal, emotionally stunted bloke would do and decide to write three blokes on the internet for help. My in-depth stalking of his stats revealed is a successful player, 300 career wickets, at a club who were once considered a local rival of my club. They have since surpassed my club and now play several divisions higher. To make matters worse, we work in the same industry, but he is much more senior to me, owns several properties, and drives a better car. Why am I so intimidated by some guy I've never met? My wife doesn't understand why I'm not enthusiastic to meet him, as we will have so much in common. Meanwhile, I'm lying awake at night imagining him shaking my hand while he calls me champ. That's fucking weird. My fear is heightened because I have carefully cultivated the myth that I'm actually good at cricket to our families, convincing them I play at a good level and that I can't miss games. In reality, I am distinctly average second teamer playing a shit level with an average of 30-odd, 18.31. Ah, you can't do that. And small hands, wasting my time pursuing a long-dead dream. I have used this myth in order to avoid attending social engagement for years. I've even turned up to my own engagement party over an hour late, despite promising to leave my game early. We batted second and I made 78 not out. I couldn't bring myself to get out or retire, so just kept batting. We didn't even win the game. I still think it was worth it. Help me, TGC. Can I avoid this situation forever? Or is divorce my only option? P.S. I am now more nervous that you will read this. He will be a listener, work out who I am, and know he's inside my head. Kind regards, Will Parker. No. Anonymous.
This is a real pickle. I've thought about this a lot.
Yeah,
real...
his lie's about to be exposed. Exposed.
Yeah. Mm. It's a real pickle. I mean, he asks at the start, is divorce my only option? Like, yeah. Must I divorce my wife?
It's on the mind.
I mean, the alternative is to try and end this new relationship.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Like, the cricket grapevine is a pretty accessible thing.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, I'm just making a guess, if this guy, this new guy on the block who's got more properties and more wickets and might have got you out and several divisions higher, bigger hands, if he's taken 300 wickets, he's no doubt had enough exposure to the circuit to at least warrant rumours about him. You know what I mean? He's probably an upstanding man, no doubt about it.
Mm.
But 300 wickets is probably a lot of circuits. And things happen on the circuit.
Oh, yes, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I like where this is going.
Well,
dark.
But the association with the local rival, I'm just thinking of ways to end the relationship, normal thing, Monday afternoon, what I do.
Yep.
What do you do? This is what I do.
Yep.
You know, even just the association with that local rival club might be enough. Find some scandals from that club. Post-truth society. Connect him to them. Don't do it distinctly. Go to your wife and say, like, oh, did you play that club? My dad, that embezzlement thing. You know, whatever.
Check the accounts.
Yeah. 300 wickets. Yeah. Obviously, a politically savvy person to have taken 300 wickets at a club, you have to actually maintain relationships at a club with probably dysfunctional people for that period of time. Just put a few things, just sow a few seeds. I'm just saying, is this saving his marriage?
This is the most horrific thing I've ever heard you say.
Yeah.
I've heard some stuff.
The alternative is like, you know, I'm just thinking of people who've taken 300 wickets and have a lot of properties. Steve O'Keefe. There's like literally articles in the paper about his investment portfolio.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which we interviewed him. Just low level investments up in Brisbane. Good investments there.
Okay. So,
you could always just admire him for his achievements and be humble. Obviously, I mean, that's a silly idea, isn't it?
No, that's wrong. Silly. Wrong thing to say.
I think if this guy shakes his hand and like calls him champ as he worries about.
Yeah.
No one actually does that. I mean, anyone who does that would have an IQ of 80. G'day, champ. Like,
no one's got 300 club wickets with an IQ higher than that.
How do you believe those properties?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a good question. Where's well, it must be very Epstein. Where does his money come from?
Well, good point.
Not say. Calling this guy Epstein necessarily, but you know, can tie it all in. Hashtag look into it.
You know, shake his hands and call. Like someone shakes your hand. Yes. You've never met him before, but there's a bit of a male exchange going on.
Yep. Zoology.
They shake
shit.
Your hand and call you champ.
Yeah.
That is like. Yeah, I don't know how to say it other than no one can have an IQ higher than 80 doing that. Yeah. I don't know what else to say there. I mean, it's just so – it's either so ignorant or disrespectful or both. You cannot possibly be a good person or be able to run a sane life if you do that to somebody.
The other thing, I like how you've gone down the path of, like, sabotage their happiness, the other relationship's happiness. Because, like, just remind me, this
I
time of year –
I don't want him to get divorced.
You're getting to this time of year in Australia where it's like there's one or two rounds left. And if you're out of the finals or you're playing for, but I keep hearing this all the time, oh, let's fuck their season. If you're playing against a team who can make finals and all they're playing for is like, let's fucking ruin these guys. Yeah. I never had it in my heart to be like, oh, I'm now extremely motivated to score runs because I haven't been in the last fucking 16 rounds, 32 weekends.
I can't
weekends.
Do it for myself.
Yeah, oh, no, I'll do it because I don't like these guys that I've never met.
A lot of guys get off on that though.
But that's why there's so many fucking low scores at the moment.
Yeah.
Like no one's ruining anyone's weekend. Everyone who plays cricket is ruining each other's weekends.
Anyone who suggests or encourages you to locate your motivation in hate for others, well, needs to be investigated. Yeah. Like, or just needs to see a counsellor.
Yeah.
Really. It's like, could you not do it for yourself and your own personal growth? No.
Works in politics though.
Yeah, good point.
That's separation kind of politics.
Well, they're all normal people, aren't they?
Normal
it
people.
It doesn't reward psychopathy in any way.
Are we done here?
I think I was done a while ago.
Thanks to Seb for listening to the Great Cricketer Podcast. Thanks to Seb Gotch for coming along the show. We'll see you guys next week.